close all across the state for at least a month. Drive-through testing sites are set up around town and new shopping hours for seniors at your local grocery store. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, our top stories on the Friday Media Roundtable as we cover the coronavirus outbreak with everything you need to know now. You can join us with your calls, 549-2937. Get on the line. Then later, raising money in this time of coronavirus. We'll tell you how nonprofits are thinking creatively. But first, it's Friday, and joining us to discuss this extraordinary time we are now living in, we welcome Bill Bortsfield, WJCT's digital content editor. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Melissa.
Bill is with me in studio. We have two more roundtable participants on the line. A.G. Gankarski of Florida Politics. A.G., good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa.
And Tim Gibbons of the Jacksonville Business Journal. Hi, Tim.
Good to be kind of with you.
Thanks, guys. Exactly. And for the duration, unless it's a member of our own staff, all of our guests are going to be on the phone as we practice social distancing through this crisis. But the good news is the technology allows us to keep the news and information coming to you, all of our listeners. Lots to talk about right now, most of it revolving around the coronavirus crisis. Our digital editor, Bill Bortsfield, has a roundup of all this information on our website at WJCT.org. Bill, could you start with just the latest off-the-top facts that we need to let people know about?
Yeah, sure. Probably at the top of the list, of course, are the number of people infected. For example, if you picked up the morning paper today, you would have seen 393 statewide cases in Florida. That has already changed. If you were to check our coronavirus site right now, WJCT.org, it's already up to 432. And as you heard a couple minutes ago during Michelle's newscast, unfortunately, we've had our first confirmed death in Duval County of an 83-year-old man. You know, when you look at it from a nationwide perspective, we're up over 14,000 confirmed cases. Globally, we're up over 246,000. But, you know, we're also getting the boots on the ground. The big story, of course, locally at the Prime Osborne Center, we're going to see limited pre-testing starting this morning. I believe it's around 11 o'clock. There are some limitations. You know, there's some, not everybody's going to be tested. So definitely best to check the website or your other local news source for those conditions. But two of the facts, there is a special code called Here For You, which would make the testing $25 or $49 without. And of course, the feds are also coming to town, and they're going to be setting up TIAA Bank Field as soon as possible. We're likely to see that in operation this weekend.
Right. So testing at two sites, and more about this on our website. Also, grocery stores have set up special hours just for senior citizens. The malls and the schools have closed, and more shutdowns could be in our very near future. AG, you're just back from Tallahassee, where you were spending several weeks covering the legislative session and been covering the governor's response to this escalating crisis. Could we see another legislative session to deal with this, and would they meet remotely?
Well, they expressed confidence that they budgeted adequately for coronavirus. When they started contemplating coronavirus early in March, they were thinking, well, $10 to $20 million might be sufficient. They ended up budgeting $25 million in hard money. There's $27 million coming in from the feds at last check, and there's over $300 million in reserves. But this is basically seen as a down payment because of the things that are happening with the job market, with a lack of, you know, retail sales, all of these things that are happening because the economy is essentially shut down. There is expectation among many that they'll be back in Tallahassee in the next few months to revise this budget. That's what happens after catastrophes when you have these abbreviated sessions. The legislators sometimes have to come back and revise or true up figures, and that's what's going to happen here.
It's 549-2937 to join our Friday Media Roundtable. Tim Gibbons, editor of the Jacksonville Business Journal. The big concern, of course, aside from the overwhelming public health concern, is the economy. Restaurants, bars, and hotels are shedding jobs daily. The tourism industry is vital to this state's economy. As you cover the business sector for the Business Journal and you're talking to the owners of stores and companies, they're wondering how on earth they're going to get through this.
They are. It's a very scary time for many business owners. I mean, obviously, the ones that you see most visibly are what you just said, the bars, the restaurants, hotels, you know, the cruise industry is totally shut down. But this reverberates throughout everything. All of those restaurants buy supplies from places. You know, for a lot of businesses like ours, you know, a lot of the media stuff you can do remotely, but there's a lot of businesses that just are hunkering down, and that's causing huge devastation. You can see it on a national scale with the jump in unemployment claims last week. We're still waiting for most recent figures from Florida, but there's just a lot of people out of work and a lot of business owners who are really struggling to keep the lights on.
Just to give you one data point alone, Florida hotels and businesses that support the hotel industry have cut nearly 400,000 jobs amid this outbreak. This is according to the American Hotel and Lodging Association. That's just the hotel business, Bill. That's not even counting all of the other businesses that Tim just mentioned.
No, no question about it. And, you know, there's very few bright spots, although I do want to try to also point out some good news. In fact, we just got an announcement yesterday that Sprouts, the supermarket chain, Sprouts Farmers Market, is still going to go ahead with this planned late April opening on Beach Boulevard. And they have said they're still committed and they are hiring about 110 people for that project. So it is at least one sliver in what is obviously a very grim picture right now for so many people. As we know, many of the supermarkets have really struggled to keep up. We were just posting some pictures yesterday, you know, earlier in the week when some aisles were bare, and we were just talking to some of the folks at Winn-Dixie yesterday, and of course, they're among the latest to adjust their hours, and as so many stores are doing, they're setting up a morning hour, many cases, about the 8 a.m. hour for seniors or those with higher risks, such as immune deficiencies or asthma, things like that, where they can shop in a less dense environment. And among the stores you'll find on our coronavirus site, by the way, is a listing of all the larger chains in Jacksonville and what some of the smaller ones are doing as well, such as Natural Food out at the beach, which, by the way, as many of our listeners know, just had reopened last year. But, you know, so many are just struggling to keep going and make sure that the supplies are coming in as we need them so that, you know, an essential like food just keeps coming.
That's right. And there are concerns about the supply chain overall. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we cover everything related to the coronavirus outbreak with Bill Bortsfield, Tim Gibbons, A.G. Gankarski, and yours truly. We'll go to your calls in a moment. If you want to join us right now, the number is 549-2937. A lot of people call in when they're out on the roads, and there are not going to be as many people out on the roads for the duration. So I understand if people want to engage digitally. We're getting a lot of that. Here's a tweet from Brian. Will the beaches stay open for as long as they did, staying open for as long as they did hurt Florida in the long run? And why are the state's governor and senators sending mixed messages about this? A.G. Gankarski, let's talk about the beaches. Governor Ron DeSantis has faced a lot of criticism for not closing Florida's beaches. And some video was widely shared a few days ago showing spring breakers partying, I think, in Clearwater Beach. The governor responded to that, and they have asked beaches to have congregations of no more than 10 people, I believe, is the latest directive. But the beaches are still open. How do you see the governor and the legislature dealing with this issue in the coming days?
Well, you know, the governor, he gave a really long answer why beaches weren't closed yesterday in a press availability. 5 minutes, 891 words was one count. We'll go with that. But it's really a difference in approach. You know, the governor has taken more of a home rule approach, more of a let locals make decisions because locals know the situation on the ground better than we do at the state level. Senator Scott, you know, obviously when he was governor, you know, he took a top-down approach to disaster management, the old Navy cap and all of that. And, you know, Governor Scott saying, get off the beaches. So you've got, you know, really two different approaches here. Ultimately, I think the issue that state government is running into with this, and this goes far beyond the beaches, is how much can you actually manage? You can issue edicts. You can say stay off the beaches. You can, you know, put everybody in on lockdown, but enforcing is a different matter, especially when you've got first responders, including police and, you know, paramedics, who are basically the front lines of this pandemic. They, you know, when they take enforcement actions, they are, you know, more likely to contract disease or encounter disease in other people. So there are a lot of things to consider there, but, you know, closing the beaches, it's something that is by and large happening. But it wasn't something that happened this week with a top-down edict like some people wished. And we'll see if that was the right move or not.
Right. Well, we'll have to see. Tim Gibbons, different states are dealing with this differently. In big metros like New York and San Francisco, they're moving almost to a shelter-in-place model where people are not allowed out on the streets unless they have to go to the grocery store or the drugstore. We could be headed in that direction soon here as well.
Absolutely, and that's actually the challenge, because you have, you know, different areas. So, you know, you look at that video of people on different beaches from First Coast beaches, and I think people go, you know, what the heck? That's clearly not what people should be doing. You're not seeing that on Jacksonville area beaches. So, you know, the thinking of why stop people from getting some fresh air as long as they're keeping 6 feet away from each other, you know, that's a different thing than spring break partiers. I think one of the things coming out, particularly from local government, is kind of a vibe of, we're asking you to do this now, and we'll tell you to do it later if need be. I mean, the original order for bars, for example, was just, you know, basically cut down on the number of people. And then the mayor's office said, yeah, people weren't doing that. And then the state moved in with the ban. I think there is a sense that we don't know how long this is going to go on for. And if you move too quickly to a shelter-in-place sort of model, you know, how long can people stand that before things just kind of start breaking down?
Yeah, I mean, Bill, we can look to other countries as a guide, China, Italy, how long citizens in those countries were forced into that way of living. And it was a good couple of months.
Yeah, and, you know, isolation is something that is very hard to deal with for many people. And, you know, one of the areas that our local community really works at is ministry. You know, I was talking earlier this week to Pastor George Johnson. He leads the Shepherd of the Woods Lutheran Church. And he said one of the hardest parts of what's going on for his congregation is it's a ministry of presence, as he put it. You know, he and his congregation, lay member and clergy, they regularly go to nursing homes and hospitals. They visit shut-ins to deliver that personal touch. And unfortunately, because of the coronavirus, obviously they've had to stop doing that. Now, his church, like so many across the First Coast, is doing what it can to maintain that human touch. They're doing services on YouTube, newsletters, they're doing text message and things of that nature. In fact, you know, we also, of course, know that now the Diocese of St. Augustine has come out and said there will be no more public masses for the foreseeable future. But again, like other religious spiritual communities, they are trying to make sure they can maintain that connection. So they are also streaming Mass. Folks can go and find the Mass on their Facebook page. So at least that connection, that human connection, can be made through technology. And, you know, that's one area where we are fortunate as a generation. If you think back to previous generations that have been in somewhat similar situations, there was no video streaming. Mm-hmm. There was no, in some cases, depending on how far back you go, even telephones. I mean, the generation before us, for example, even if they had long distance. They would have really worried about talking more than 5 or 10 minutes just because of the long distance charges. And as we know right now, many providers are saying they're lifting data caps, for example, so that our workforce can continue at home and families can stay in touch.
And let me ask about that as well. Tim Gibbons, there's been a temporary moratorium on evictions and foreclosures. There have been calls for up to $1 trillion in stimulus funding. Is that even going to be enough? And should other payments be suspended for people that are just not going to be able to make enough money during this crisis to cover all their bills?
It's a very, very challenging question. And that the answer to your first question, will it be enough? No. I mean, there's the amount of public investment that would be needed on a national level is just mind-boggling. When you have people talking about, you know, 20% unemployment rates, that's something that most of us have not seen in our lifetime. So the idea of stimulus, this is, you know, think of it as something like the economic slowdown after 9/11, but that was an event that was, you know, happened on that day, and then we dealt with the effects afterwards. You know, this is going to go on, and it's going to be hard on many individuals and businesses. To follow up on something that Bill just said, though, without taking away at all from the pain that many businesses are feeling and will be feeling, it is interesting to see the creativity that's being applied across mm-hmm. the First Coast. You have, you know, realtors doing virtual home tours, and you have boutiques who are doing, you can do fittings through video cameras, and bars and restaurants that are switching to, you know, a heavy takeout model. There are a lot of people applying a lot of creativity to this. That's not going to make everything better, but it is a, you know, if there is a tiny bright spot, it's seeing that creativity and ingenuity being applied.
Let's go to your calls now. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable as we discuss the state's response to the coronavirus outbreak. What are your thoughts and comments? Give us a call, 549-2937. Terry is in Riverside. Hi, Terry. Good morning. Hope you're doing all right out there.
Hey, Melissa. Doing great.
Good.
Thanks for everybody being there. Listen, here's the movement I want to get started. For those of you who are regulars at bars, clubs, pubs, or regulars at small restaurants that have closed, figure out what your tab would have been for the next 30 days and send a gift card or help start a GoFundMe page for the staffers and bartenders and servers, so we can all keep those people in the funds that we would be spending there anyway.
It's a great idea, Terry. I was thinking of the same thing, that we need to start a local organized effort to do this and come up with a hashtag for it and get everybody pulling in the same direction doing this, because it's the only way that we're going to be able to support local businesses like restaurants, which are still open, bars, which are not. You know, Bill, I mean, right now restaurants are creatively doing takeout and delivery, and they're letting people come in and sit down, but only at every few tables. That's likely to change soon.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I think Terry is really on to something. I mean, especially right now, I personally tonight plan on checking with one of my favorite restaurants to find out, A, if they're open, or B, if they have pickup. And, you know, my wife have talked about this. We definitely want to go ahead and do as much takeout as we can to go ahead and support local business. And I think that's something that we can all do. It's a very small thing, and it's certainly not going to make everybody whole, but it is one small thing that maybe we can do as a community.
AG Gankarski, Governor DeSantis has talked about small business loans to small businesses like restaurants. A lot of them, though, say that they're already in a lot of debt and that a loan is not probably going to be able to help them.
Yeah, probably not. I mean, this is kind of the reality of the stimulus spending that's being proposed. We're dealing with decades upon decades of neglect of the system writ large. I mean, the recovery from the 2008 economic crash was stimulus money toward corporations such as car companies and so on. Over the next 10 years, we saw the slowest economic recovery in history, but also an increase in gaps between rich and poor in terms of wealth. We're seeing wealth accumulated with the upper class. And, you know, this basically means that people in the lower middle classes, including many small business people, don't have safety nets. They've been running on easy credit. I mean, credit's been loose for how many years? And so these measures that are coming in where all these Republican politicians sound like Bernie Sanders all of a sudden, you know, they may be too little too late, because the issues with the economy that this crisis is exposing are structural. The failings with the healthcare system are structural, and they've happened over a course of time, not in the last 2 years or 5 years, but over decades. And the same way with the economic disparities that we're seeing. The safety net has long since been frayed. And, you know, any stimulus capital that is spent, it'll mitigate, but it's not going to solve the problem.
This crisis has laid bare just how fragile we are, Bill.
Yeah, you know, I and you and all of us in this, you know, station remember 2008. And one of the things in 2008 that buckled so much was homes, and so many folks saw foreclosures. And I know a lot of people in the financial community are worried that this time, one of the problems, one of the things that may buckle are automotive loans. I mean, think about it. So many people have 7 year auto loans at this point, and there's a real concern that there may be a subprime auto loan crisis brewing. And that's going to be another challenge for folks that are carrying a lot of car payments to deal with. It's not just the mortgage. It's not just the utilities. It used to be you might get a loan for 3 or maybe 4 years, and now we're at 7. And of course, the cost of those vehicles have really gone up.
Tim Gibbons, I know you like to say this, that money is a fiction we all agree on. I've heard you say that before. Are we going to get to a place where we all collectively agree that money is a fiction we're just going to suspend for a few months, that people just are going to be forgiven payments that they would ordinarily have to make?
That actually is part of the challenge, that when you think of how interconnected everything is. So there's the kind of like easy sort of, if you're a struggling small business, you know, there's talk of programs that would let you just put off paying your mortgage, for example. Well, that's good, but putting it off doesn't mean that the interest payments go away or that the principal payments go away. It just means that you have a pause on them, and that then comes roaring back. As AG and Bill just, you know, basically alluded to, the idea that if people are stretched thin anyhow, giving them additional loans can tide them over. But again, this isn't something that we're going to just, you know, snap back from. There is a hope that in like the third quarter, as things settle down, that there'll be so much pent-up demand that there'll be a big boost there. But that's somewhere in between, you know, hope and a prayer, I guess.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we want your calls at 549-2937. Let me make note of something else that happened just in the last day or so. The Trump administration has come under criticism for responding too slowly to this crisis. Also now, there is a lot of criticism being directed at the Senate Intelligence Committee. Chairman Richard Burr, Republican of North Carolina, apparently sold up nearly $2 million in stocks just before the market dropped in February. He received a private briefing letting him and his colleagues know just how serious this was going to be, but said nothing publicly. The reason I bring this up is that this touches our listeners in Georgia. Senator Kelly Loeffler, a new senator in Georgia who's up for re-election this year, sold off hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stock in late January as she was getting the briefing on the virus. This is a bipartisan scandal. Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, apparently also sold off stock. So, AG Gankarski, what to make of this? We're being told that the senators on the Intelligence Committee, who were getting the most highly sensitive and serious information weeks and weeks ahead of everyone else, kept silent while they sold off stock. And in particular, Senator Loeffler bought stock in a teleworking company. So you have to ask if she was anticipating if that stock was going to appreciate in value.
Yeah, I mean, there are obviously optical issues here, and this is something that, you know, in a functional Democratic Republic, the Senate would have ethics hearings on this. Will they do that? Remains to be seen. But you know, this is sort of the inside knowledge that politicians from both parties have capitalized on, you know, for crisis after crisis. I don't know if the Senate has the appetite to go after these three. You know, it's a Republican majority Senate, and you know, two of the three are Republicans. So, you know, wait and see. But this just may be another tempest in the teapot that blows away. I mean, Loeffler's got an election, and you know, this year she wasn't elected in the first place; she was an appointee. So, there may be some hay to bale there. But with Feinstein, she's a lifer, and with Burr, I think the party slant is such that it might not be able to be used against him.
Yeah, there's so much going. Tim, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. One little just, you know, footnote to that I found interesting with Burr in particular. He was one of three senators who opposed a bill in 2012 that did explicitly make insider trading by senators illegal. His argument was insider trading already is illegal, so there was no need for a law specifically doing that. But he was one of just three that voted against it.
Interesting. Okay. Lots of calls flowing into the show now. If you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We want to hear from you. Here are a few emails from listeners. Paul says, add the tip if you get takeout. Someone put that order together for you. Tip 20%. Andy emails the show, if I can't go to the beach, I might as well be dead. I don't need Senator Scott dictating my behavior from poolside in his mega mansion. I am smart enough to maintain my social distance. All right, let's go to your calls. It's 549-2937. Jody at the beaches. Jody, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, how can we increase our immunity? I know that some people are saying green tea or eating more fresh fruits and vegetables and avoiding cigarettes. What can people do to increase their immunity?
Great question. And we all need to be focused on that. Bill Bortzfeld, the most obvious thing everyone can do and that they should already be doing is frequent hand washing. We've heard that over and over. But
yeah,
people are also trying to figure out, how can I just maintain my health during
sure.
this?
Sure. And, you know, I mean, even with social distancing, the first thing that comes to mind in my mind is exercise. There's no reason we can't get out in our neighborhoods and walk and say hi from a distance to our friends and neighbors. Obviously the things that we've heard over and over again, whether it's the hand sanitizer or the wipes and things of that nature. And don't forget to take some you time. You know, I mean, we all get tense at times like this. I mean, there's a lot of things going on financially, work-related, family-related. So let's not forget about sleep. I mean, we all know that, for example, good night's sleep helps keep our immune system a little bit stronger.
AG.
Yeah.
One of you was trying to jump in just there.
Well, I mean, I'd co-sign a lot of that. I'd also say, you know, eating fresh green vegetables, hydrating, all of the things you would do during cold and flu season, they apply here. I mean, you're essentially dealing with the virus. So it follows that if your body is run down, you're more susceptible to the virus. But, you know, really it comes down to self-care. You know, many of us have a lot more time for self-care these days.
Yeah.
Because we're working from home and everything is closed. So, I mean, use that time. But I think, you know, the way to avoid community spread with this is to show common sense. Like, you know, don't be in crowds. Don't be around people who are coughing. If you feel tired, lie down. You know, these kind of things will help, you know, stop the curve of exponential community spread that we're all worried about right now.
Yeah, flattening the curve. Yep.
Yeah, flattening the curve. Take care of yourself, and you'll take care of other people.
549-2937. Jane is in Ponte Vedra Beach. Hi, Jane. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for taking my call. With regard to the stock sell-off by the people on the committee, both Democrats and Republicans, I think any time America is in a crisis, and this takes me back to Kennedy being assassinated, you know, Vietnam, 9/11, et cetera, the best and worst in us comes out. And we're all Americans. How we deal with that, hopefully the rule of law will prevail, and these individuals who the crisis brings out the worst in us hopefully the rule of law will prevail and they will be treated appropriately. And that's my belief in this country and the Constitution.
Jane, you're so right. And I thank you for those thoughts. You know, Tim Gibbons, I looked up the original root meaning of the word crisis. It means turning point. That's in the original Latin. This crisis is going to, I think we'll all look back on it as a turning point in our nation and the world's history. And things are going to look very different at a certain point when we get through this.
Very much so. Also, I know how much research and background you always do for these shows, but the idea that you're looking up Latin root words honestly does take it to a new level. But that is the thing that people have to think about. And I think when AJ and Bill just talked about self-care and using common sense, in some ways the response to this has to be somewhere between not being dumb, like the spring breakers that, you know, and then the video that went, well, viral in multiple ways, but also not unduly panicking. That the idea of we're trying to stop the spread of a disease, we're trying to flatten the curve, but we're you know, it's not people out in the streets with machine guns sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is going to be long-term structural change. If you're in a business that attracts crowds, it's going to be a different thing even months from now. The experts say that this is not something that's going to just, you know, go on for 10 weeks and then be over. Things will change. And in some ways, the lessons we're learning now, the connections we make now, reaching out to support businesses now, all of those things are things that will have to continue, you know, in the long run.
Tracy is on the line from Mandarin. Hi, Tracy. Good morning.
Good morning. I am a 40-year practice allergy immunologist. Just the alternative side of increasing immunity, I think I said last time too, taking a lot of colostrum, lot of fruits and vegetables give you a lot of antioxidants. And Dr. Wells said many years ago, give 3 times a day, rule of 4, 7 and 9, that means breathe in, hold it for 7, count of 7, breathe out for the count of 9, give you oxygen to the body, and that's a very good immunity, yoga, and think positive for your own body. Positive brings the positive result. Thank you so much.
That's so great, Tracy. Thank you for that. Misty in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Misty.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. How are you?
Good. I'm well, very well. Thank you. I'm blessed. But I wanted to mention, I listened to NPR yesterday, and I think there was a girl in San Francisco who had started a movement where it was a younger adult that knew of a shut-in who needed help, who's of the age. Sorry, I'm going to start crying. And just brought them food.
Yeah.
And dropped it off at their house and rang the doorbell. And didn't have contact with them, but help those people are the people who are most vulnerable.
That's right. And I would encourage everyone, check on your neighbors, especially senior citizens. Just check on your neighbors. Make sure they have what they need. Bill, you know, as awful as this is, and thank you for the call, Misty, it shows that human empathy and caring is still alive, and people are going to do what they can to help each other. We've got to all look out for each other.
Yeah, and you know, I think our countries always come together in times of crisis. And I think many of us would agree the last several years, things seem to have gotten so polarized, especially in the political spectrum. But we've seen this in time and time again when we've had a crisis like this. We've put aside pettiness to come together, mm-hmm. whether it's next door neighbors bringing a pie, which maybe you don't do in a situation like this. But as you say, whether it's picking up the phone, knocking on the door, saying hello at the mailbox, all of those things. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I'm very curious to see and I'm hopeful of is whether this is going to bring the return of bipartisanship in politics, you know, because if ever there was a time where that is going to be critical in the coming months, it's now.
That's right. AG, our political reporter, how do you see this affecting our politics and the presidential election? It's hard. I mean, we can't predict all the way to November, but certainly this has upended the narratives that had been set before.
Yes, I mean, this is really bad for the president's reelection chances. I mean, the stock market erosion alone undercuts his narrative. The seemingly incompetent response, the delayed response in many ways, it also undercuts his narrative. The president is going to have to pivot toward a bipartisan tack more and more as this election approaches. The primaries are over on both sides, really. So, you know, what's left is digging out of this. Will he be able to work with Pelosi and Schumer and people like that? That remains to be seen. I mean, as we know from this president, he may give a policy speech one day and then the next morning undercut it with 50 tweets that fueled partisan politics. So the president is going to have to downplay his schizophrenic messaging and find a way to, you know, present a unified message the way every other president has during crisis.
More feedback coming into the show. Cynthia emails me and says, I'm a medical professional. Closing our beaches is the right thing to do. If people can't self-regulate, the government needs to do it. Here is another email from Linda. The definition of crisis in Chinese involves two brushstrokes. One stands for danger, the other opportunity. Thanks for that. Okay, let's go to Leslie in Lakewood. Go ahead, Leslie.
Oh, hi. My question is regarding contact tracing. I don't know what's being done in this area. I haven't heard anything about it, but we don't appear to have a huge number of patients. And on that basis, contact tracing would seem to be a good idea.
And define that, if you could, contact tracing.
Well, when someone comes down with the virus and has been confirmed as a patient, is anything being done to look at where they've been, who they've dealing with recently, and where their kind of area of influence might be regarding spreading the virus?
I believe the answer to that is no, Leslie, but thank you. You know, Tim, that brings up a point. The other day we heard that Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz got into an argument with the governor saying that she needs to, that the Florida needs to accept that community spread of this disease is what is happening and that there are probably a lot of undiagnosed cases out there that aren't in the official numbers yet.
That is the great challenge of this. And a moment ago when we were talking about politics and the way the response has been handled, I think there is a widespread understanding that obviously a pandemic hits, that's nobody's fault. But there is a sense that the way the U.S. has gone about handling things has been slow and has been rolled out poorly, and the way tests were handled at the beginning was not done properly because of that issue, that really what we need now is information. We need that information spread through the media. We need it spread through government channels that does track this better, because it's a virus. It's not a thing that you can see or feel until you come down with it. And there are absolutely people on the First Coast, in Florida, in the U.S., who have this disease who have not been diagnosed. So the more we can know about who has it, the more we can track who those people are dealing with, the better.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's the cities and the federal testing sites that you talked about earlier, that will help. But even in those cases, you can't go be tested unless you have symptoms. And if you look at media reports from other areas, there are plenty of people who feel they should be tested who
can't get the test. Bill, let's talk about that. Jacksonville has set up two testing sites. The Prime Osborne site kicks off today at 11 a.m. The TIAA Bankfield site at 9 a.m. tomorrow. So more testing is becoming available, but only if you are showing symptoms and you have a doctor's okay to get the test. And they do cost $25, although you'll be reimbursed. The big criticism is that the tests haven't been widely available and that not enough people, even people who might not be showing symptoms, they're not eligible to get a test. But what we're learning is that you can have this disease and pass it on without showing any symptoms.
Yeah, and unfortunately, even though things are getting better, and these obviously are two very good steps, I mean, we've all heard over and over that we're just not going to be able to keep up. And so that goes in circles back to why it is so darn important to do our best individually to try to keep our immune systems as strong as possible. And, you know, many people, especially first responders, but so many people right now in so many different communities are really running themselves ragged, just trying to keep up with all the changes that are going on in their own business worlds or family worlds. And I you know, just want to remind everyone, whether you're a supervisor, a company owner, an employee, we've also got to remember not to run ourselves down, because that only increases the odds that we may become vulnerable.
Yeah. James on the West Side. Hi, James. Hope you're well. Go ahead.
Ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Melissa. A question. A friend of mine sent me this little, I guess, little tweet thing, a little article. Did Donald Trump actually say that the coronavirus was a hoax at one time? He was calling this whole thing a hoax. Was that true, or did they...
thank you for the call, James. What he said was that he believed the Democrats were playing up the threat of the virus. And he didn't say that there was no virus per se. He said that the Democrats were exaggerating the threat of a virus and called that a hoax. AG, as you said a minute ago, those types of comments that the president made for several weeks as this crisis slowly unfolded could come back to haunt him in November. We're already seeing ads popping up on television documenting the comments that the president made this in its early days was initially dismissed as not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing. When the president pops off at rallies and gives red meat, and obviously rallies are things of the past for foreseeable future, you know, these are things that play well in a room, but, you know, don't really bear up under scrutiny. And what we're going to see as testing expands throughout this country is a sharp increase in positive tests, a sharp increase in cases, because we finally have more of a mechanism to diagnose them. So you're going to see that here in Jacksonville and every place else. You're going to see an uptick. And, you know, as this happens, the hoax comments and other comments that the president made, which were imprudent, will come back to haunt him. And if we see an Italy-type situation where, you know, people are dying by the hundreds every day, you know, those comments have more resonance. If we get out of this in the next couple of months with minimal deaths, then it might be something he skates by, just like, you know, his handling of hurricanes and, you know, other crises that this administration does for us.
The key to minimizing deaths is to flatten the curve, to stay home as much as possible, to close big events. Schools are closed statewide until at least mid-April. Home learning begins next week. Kids are getting free meals and laptops if they need it. Families are getting free or low-cost Wi-Fi. So we can't stress this enough. Flatten the curve. That means don't do anything that can spread this disease. Stay home. Don't go out in groups. Do everything you can to socially distance. We've got to all do this. And no lightning round today. We're out of time. I want to thank so much Bill Bortsfield, A.G. Gankarski, and Tim Gibbons for joining us virtually, except for Bill, who's with me. Guys, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
Up next, thinking creatively as social distancing becomes a temporary way of life. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm. Terrell Hogan's consumer law practice provides representation for personal financial injuries caused by unfair and deceptive business dealings. More at waynehogan.law. Celebrating 45 years supporting youth in urgent need, the Youth Crisis Center now is building House of Hope, safe housing for LGBTQ youth needing physical, emotional, and mental health care in the growing local homeless community. More at youthcrisiscenter.org.
Broadway is dark, but on the next Fresh Air, we celebrate the 90th birthday of the greatest Broadway composer and lyricist of our time, Stephen Sondheim. His birthday is Sunday. We'll listen back to our 2010 interview when he was celebrating his 80th. Two of his Broadway revivals, West Side Story and Company, are suspended because of the pandemic. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm John Dankosky. This week on Science Friday, how poet Jane Hirschfield channels science into art for what she calls unaccountable times.
How do you know that a scientific result is significant? You know it because you're thrilled.
The poetry of science and of cataclysm. That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Today at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
New York's governor holds back on shelter in place, at least for now, but he says it's time for the military to step forward.
Build temporary medical facilities. Get us backup beds.
Is America ready for what comes next? I'm Todd Zwillick. It's the Friday News Roundup. That's next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, large events are being canceled left and right all across town right now. It's a necessity as we all try to reduce the transmission of coronavirus. But some big galas are going ahead, just in a digital fashion. One of them is the 2020 Children's Champion Awards Gala, benefiting Episcopal Children's Services. It was planned for March 26th on the UNF campus, but now you can take part by just logging on. CEO Connie Stoffel is on the line with more. Hi, Connie.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great, and it's good to talk to you. Now, the Children's Champion Awards is a wonderful event honoring people that have really done amazing philanthropic work. You had planned to have this at UNF, but of course you've had to scrap those plans. It's exciting to hear that you're still going ahead, though. How is this going to work?
Well, we had to really think creatively. But we just so wanted to try to do something different during this time and not just scrap the plans, as you stated, and still be able to celebrate during this kind of sad time and scary time for everyone, and also to celebrate our fantastic honorees. And is it okay if I talk about who they are?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, Martha Baker, Martha Fry Baker, who is just such an amazing enthusiastic leader, philanthropic leader. She's served on numerous boards. She's a founding member of the Women's Giving Alliance, and she serves with organizations that impact the lives of women and children. Serves on the Wilson's Children's Hospital, and I won't go into the list of everything she does and has done over her lifetime. Julia Juju Taylor, a calm and compassionate leader. She cares about the community and really invites you to care and learn with her. She's not too long ago moved up from Duval to Nassau County, kind of expanded her area and devoted to helping women and children still, and was one of the founding members as well on the Community Foundation and still sits on that board. Peggy Bryan, who's just amazing, comforting, joyful, and you just love being around her. She's just very authentic and caring. She was born and raised in Jacksonville and has dedicated her life to the lives of others. She's worked with Learn to Read and is the YMCA's charter school, I believe it's Tiger Academy, and the Pace Center for Girls. She has been honored for her philanthropic work of the year, as well as Eve Lifetime Achievement Award winner. And they all three are still continuing to do so many things, and they've all three been very helpful to ECS, Episcopal Children's Services, all through the history of our over 50 years. So they were just so amazing that we chose them this year. And we just wanted to still be able to somehow celebrate it. So we chose to do it. Almost, I call it digitally, but it's, I guess it's more than that. It's really through our website, and that's how we came to be able to land on that. We actually have the capability on our website to host this event, and with some help from some other ways of doing it, obviously. We have an amazing videographer that works for us now. Her name is Altoria White, and we're very thankful for her. And she's done a lot of the videos already. And all we've got to do is just add a few more. And we're going to be able to do that by, working them in and hosting those on our website. We want it to be so exciting. We're going to still do our text-to-give that we were planning at the event to make it a little different this year. And we're going to still do our online, I'm going to come back to that.
That's okay.
I can't believe I forgot that word.
But let's explain.
I'll come back to that.
No problem. But let's explain how people can be part of this digitally. And how can people be part of it?
Okay, thank you. They can be part of it by, first of all, logging onto our website on April 2nd. We've moved the date at 7 o'clock, and we're going to have, that's where we're always headed. Thank you so much. You're just great. We're going to have a premier virtual gala. Now, we've never done that before, and we were going to do that in person, obviously, but so this is a real first for us. So our gala is going to go on, and it will last for 2 weeks afterwards. We just didn't figure we can do all of that, but this will also give people time to work, to keep on, and we've got instructions much more detailed on our website. We will have more put up before the event.
And
obviously,
let's get that website out there. It's ecs4kids.org. ECS,
yes, ma'am.
The number 4kids.org. If you
Absolutely.
Log on there, you can get all the information you need to be part of the big 2020 Children's Champion Awards virtual gala.
And we can give them our number if you want to.
Yes, you can give them a call at 726-1500 or go to ecs4kids.org. It's just one example of how businesses and nonprofits are thinking creatively to continue on with their plans in the event of this outbreak. Connie Stoffel, CEO of ECS, thank you for being with us, and have fun.
Thank you, Melissa. Bye-bye.
That's our show. Tune in at noon for the Florida Roundup as we track the coronavirus around the state. I'm Melissa Ross. Keep calm, flatten the curve. We will all get through this together.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.